Chapter 102. Country is astonishing. Apostrophe, apostrophe, upon my life. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Martin, in his turn. This is the most wonderful community that ever existed. A man deliberately makes a hog of himself, and that's an institution. Apostrophe, apostrophe, we have no time to acquire forms, sir, apostrophe, said Elijah Pogram. Acquire. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Martin. But it's not a question of acquiring anything. It's a question of losing the natural politeness of a savage, and that instinctive good breeding which admonishes one man not to offend and disgust another. Don't you think that man over the way, for instance, naturally knows better, but considers it a very fine and independent thing to be a brute in small matters? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he is a native of our country, and is naturally bright and spry, of course, apostrophe, said Mr. Pogram. Now, observe what this comes to, Mr. Pogram, apostrophe, pursued Martin. The mass of your countrymen begin by stubbornly neglecting little social observances, which have nothing to do with gentility, custom, usage, government, or country, but are acts of common, decent, natural, human politeness. You abet them in this, by resenting all attacks upon their social offenses, as if they were a beautiful national feature. From disregarding small obligations they come in regular course to disregard great ones, and so refuse to pay their debts. What they may do, or what they may refuse to do next, I don't know. But any man may see if he will, that it will be something following in natural succession, and a part of one great growth, which is rotten at the root. Apostrophe, the mind of Mr. Pogram was too philosophical to see this, so they went on deck again, where, resuming his former post, he chewed until he was in a lethargic state, amounting to insensibility. After a weary voyage of several days, they came again to that same wharf, where Mark had been so nearly left behind, on the night of starting for Eden. Captain Kedgick, the landlord, was standing there, and was greatly surprised to see them coming from the boat. Why, what the tarnal? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the captain. Well, I do admire this, I do. Apostrophe, apostrophe, we can stay at your house until tomorrow, Captain, I suppose? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Martin. I reckon you can stay there for a 12-month if you like, apostrophe, retorted Kedgick coolly. But our people won't best like your coming back. Apostrophe, won't like it, Captain Kedgick. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Martin. They did expect you was a going to settle, apostrophe, Kedgick answered, as he shook his head. They've been took in, you can't deny. Apostrophe, what do you mean? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Martin. You didn't ought to have received them, apostrophe, said the captain. No, you didn't. Apostrophe, apostrophe, my good friend, apostrophe, returned Martin, did I want to receive them? Was it any act of mine? Didn't you tell me they would rile up, and that I should be flayed like a wild cat, and threaten all kinds of vengeance, if I didn't receive them? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I don't know about that, apostrophe, returned the captain. But when our people's frills is out, they're starched up pretty stiff, I tell you. Apostrophe, apostrophe, with that, he fell into the rear to walk with Mark, while Martin and Elijah Pogram went on to the National. We've come back alive, you see. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mark. It ain't the thing I did expect, apostrophe, the captain grumbled. A man ain't got no right to be a public man unless he meets the public views. Our fashionable people wouldn't have attended his levee if they had known it. Apostrophe, nothing mollified the captain, who persisted in taking it very ill that they had not both died in Eden. The boarders at the National felt strongly on the subject too, but it happened by good fortune that they had not much time to think about this grievance, for it was suddenly determined to pounce upon the Honorable Elijah Pogram and give him a levee forthwith. As the general evening meal of the house was over before the arrival of the boat, Martin, Mark, and Pogrom were taking tea and fixings at the public table by themselves, when the deputation entered to announce this honor, consisting of 6 gentlemen boarders and a very shrill boy. "Sir," said the spokesman. "Mr. Pogrom," cried the shrill boy. The spokesman, thus reminded of the shrill boy's presence, introduced him. "Dr. Guinery Dunkel, sir. A gentleman of great poetical elements. He has recently joined us here, sir, and is an acquisition to us, sir, I do assure you." "Yes, sir. Mr. Jodd, sir. Mr. Izzard, sir. Mr. Julius Bibb, sir." Julius Washington Meriwether Bibb, said the gentleman himself to himself. "I beg your pardon, sir. Excuse me. Mr. Julius Washington Meriwether Bibb, sir, a gentleman in the lumber line, sir, and much esteemed. Colonel Groper, sir. Professor Piper, sir. My own name, sir, is Oscar Buffum." Each man took one slide forward as he was named, butted at the Honorable Elijah Pogrom with his head, shook hands, and slid back again. The introductions being completed, the spokesman resumed. "Sir, Mr. Pogrom, cried the shrill boy. "Perhaps," said the spokesman, with a hopeless look, "you will be so good, Dr. Guinery Dunkel, as to charge yourself with the execution of our little office, sir?" As there was nothing the shrill boy desired more, he immediately stepped forward. "Mr. Pogrom, sir, a handful of your fellow citizens, sir, hearing of your arrival at the National Hotel, and feeling the patriotic character of your public services, wish, sir, to have the gratification of beholding you, and mixing with you, sir, and unbending with you, sir, in those moments which suggested Buffum, which air so peculiarly the lot, sir, of our great and happy country." Cried Colonel Grouper, in a loud voice. "Good. Hear him. Good. And therefore, sir," pursued the doctor, "they request, as a mark of their respect, the honor of your company at a little levee, sir, in the ladies' ordinary, at 8 o'clock. Mr. Pogrom bowed, and said, "Fellow countrymen." Good. Cried the colonel. "Hear him. Good." Mr. Pogrom bowed to the colonel individually, and then resumed. "Your approbation of my labors in the common cause goes to my heart. At all times and in all places, in the ladies' ordinary, my friends, and in the battlefield." Good. Very good. Hear him. Hear him. Said the colonel. "The name of Pogrom will be proud to join you. And may it, my friends, be written on my tomb, he was a member of the Congress of our common country, and was active in his trust." "The committee, sir," said the shrill boy, "will wait upon you at 8:05. I take my leave, sir." Mr. Pogrom shook hands with him, and everybody else, once more. And when they came back again at 8:05, they said, one by one, in a melancholy voice, "How do you do, sir?" And shook hands with Mr. Pogrom all over again, as if he had been abroad for a 12-month in the meantime, and they met, now, at a funeral. But by this time Mr. Pogrom had freshened himself up, and had composed his hair and features after the Pogrom statue, so that anyone with half an eye might cry out, "There he is!" as he delivered the defiance. The committee were embellished also, and when they entered the ladies' ordinary in a body, there was much clapping of hands from ladies and gentlemen, accompanied by cries of "Pogrom! Pogrom!" And some standing up on chairs to see him. The object of the popular caress looked round the room as he walked up it, and smiled, at the same time observing to the shrill boy that he knew something of the beauty of the daughters of their common country, but had never seen it in such luster and perfection as at that moment, which the shrill boy put in the paper next day, to Elijah Pogram's great surprise. "We will request you, sir, if you please," apostrophe said Buffum, laying hands on Mr. Pogram, as if he were taking his measure for a coat, "to stand up with your back agin the wall right in the furthest corner, that there may be more room for our fellow citizens. If you could set your back right slap agin that curtain peg, sir, keeping your left leg everlastingly behind the stove, we should be fixed quite slick." Apostrophe, Mr. Pogram did as he was told, and wedged himself into such a little corner that the Pogram statue wouldn't have known him. The entertainments of the evening then began. Gentlemen brought ladies up, and brought themselves up, and brought each other up, and asked Elijah Pogram what he thought of this political question, and what he thought of that, and looked at him, and looked at one another, and seemed very unhappy indeed. The ladies on the chairs looked at Elijah Pogram through their glasses, and said audibly, "I wish he'd speak." "Why don't he speak?" "Oh, do ask him to speak." Apostrophe and Elijah Pogram looked sometimes at the ladies and sometimes elsewhere, delivering senatorial opinions, as he was asked for them. But the great end and object of the meeting seemed to be not to let Elijah Pogram out of the corner on any account, so there they kept him, hard and fast. A great bustle at the door, in the course of the evening, announced the arrival of some remarkable person, and immediately afterwards an elderly gentleman, much excited, was seen to precipitate himself upon the crowd, and battle his way towards the Honorable Elijah Pogram. Martin, who had found a snug place of observation in a distant corner, where he stood with Mark beside him, for he did not so often forget him now as formerly, though he still did sometimes, thought he knew this gentleman, but had no doubt of it, when he cried as loud as he could, with his eyes starting out of his head, "Sir, Mrs. Hominy, apostrophe apostrophe, Lord bless that woman, Mark. She has turned up again. Apostrophe, here she comes, sir, apostrophe," answered Mr. Tapley. "Pogram knows her. A public character. Always got her eye upon her country, sir. If that there lady's husband is of my opinion, what a jolly old gentleman he must be." Apostrophe apostrophe, a lane was made, and Mrs. Hominy, with the aristocratic stock, the pocket handkerchief, the clasped hands, and the classical cap, came slowly up it, in a procession of one. Mr. Pogram testified emotions of delight on seeing her, and a general hush prevailed. For it was known that when a woman like Mrs. Hominy encountered a man like Pogram, something interesting must be said. Their first salutations were exchanged in a voice too low to reach the impatient ears of the throng, but they soon became audible, for Mrs. Hominy felt her position, and knew what was expected of her. Mrs. H. was hard upon him at first, and put him through a rigid catechism in reference to a certain vote he had given, which she had found it necessary, as the mother of the modern Gracchi, to deprecate in a line by itself, set up expressly for the purpose in German text. But Mr. Pogram evading it by a well-timed allusion to the Star-Spangled Banner, which, it appeared, had the remarkable peculiarity of flouting the breeze, whenever it was hoisted where the wind blew, she forgave him. They now enlarged on certain questions of tariff, commercial treaty, boundary, importation and exportation with great effect. And Mrs. Hominy not only talked, as the saying is, like a book, but actually did talk her own books, word for word. "My! What is this?" apostrophe cried Mrs. Hominy, opening a little note which was handed her by her excited gentleman usher. "Do tell. Oh, well, now. On think." Apostrophe, and then she read aloud, as follows. "Two literary ladies present their compliments to the mother of the modern Gracchi, and claim her kind introduction, as their talented countrywoman, to to the Honorable and Distinguished Elijah Pogrom, whom the 250s have often contemplated in the speaking marble of the soul-subduing jiggle. On a verbal intimation from the mother of the MG that she will comply with the request of the 2L50s, they will have the immediate pleasure of joining the galaxy assembled to do honor to the patriotic conduct of a Pogrom. It may be another bond of union between the 250s and the mother of the MG to observe that the 250s are transcendental. Apostrophe, Mrs. Hominy promptly rose and proceeded to the door, whence she returned, after a minute's interval, with the 250s, whom she led through the lane in the crowd, with all that stateliness of deportment which was so remarkably her own, up to the great Elijah Pogrom. It was as the shrill boy cried out in an ecstasy, quite the last scene from Coriolanus. One of the 50s wore a brown wig of uncommon size. Sticking on the forehead of the other, by invisible means, was a massive cameo, in size and shape like the raspberry tart which is ordinarily sold for a penny, representing on its front the capital at Washington. Miss Toppit and Miss Codger. Apostrophe apostrophe said Mrs. Hominy. Codger's the lady so often mentioned in the English newspapers, I should think, sir, apostrophe whispered Mark. The oldest inhabitant as never remembers anything. Apostrophe, to be presented to a Pogrom, apostrophe said Miss Codger, by a Hominy, indeed, a thrilling moment is it in its impressiveness on what we call our feelings. But why we call them so, or why impressed they are, or if impressed they are at all, or if at all we are, or if there really is, oh gasping one, a Pogrom or a Hominy, or any active principle to which we give those titles, is a topic, spirit-searching, light-abandoned, much too vast to enter on, at this unlooked-for crisis. Apostrophe, mind and matter, apostrophe said the lady in the wig. Glide swift into the vortex of immensity. Howls the sublime, and softly sleeps the calm ideal, in the whispering chambers of imagination. To hear it, sweet it is. But then, out laughs the stern philosopher, and saith to the grotesque, what ho! Arrest for me that agency. Go, bring it here. And so the vision fadeth. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.